It's Tuesday, March 24th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Yes, I'm just about ready to go to the East Coast. Got a lot to talk about with you tonight. Got a great show lined up. And hey, we had a great roundtable on Saturday. We'll talk about that more here in a second. Strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central Podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central Podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central Podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii, from the Geek News Central Studio overlooking Greater Oahu. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. My name is Todd Cochran. Of course, this is the 462nd, I think, podcast of the Geek News Central. And got a lot to talk with you guys tonight. I've got everything ready really to head out here to the East Coast. Going to be leaving Wednesday evening. I'm going to have a great trip to Columbus and looking forward to meeting up with some folks out there. We'll be talking about that here in a few minutes. But, wow, what a weekend. And it started Friday evening when I came into the office last Friday evening. And I just was trying to get things arranged. You never just get to a point where you are at a point in a room and you're like, something has got to give. Well, I spent about like 2 o'clock in the morning arranging the office, and I'm very happy with the way things. You guys can't see it from the camera view at all, and probably those of you that are joining us on Ustream can't see it either. But the cables are all organized underneath where all the gear is for the recording of the podcast and the TriCaster. And it just when someone comes in here, they just don't look and frown anymore. So I think that was the most important thing. And then I finally kind of realized as well, thinking Saturday as I was working on some stuff here, that really, you know, I hate to admit it, because I've always been very good at time management, that I have gotten to the point, and I've talked a little bit about this in the show. I kind of realized it in December. I was at this point as well, that I was out of time and not able to accomplish everything that I needed to accomplish in the time that it needed to get done, and which has resulted today in me bringing on some help for Geek News Central. And some of the other media channels as well. Longtime listener of the show, someone that has helped me in past from the podcast awards and different things, is going to be helping out on the website. I don't know if he wants me to say his name or anything, but he's going to be going through and doing a bunch of work for me, just on things I just could not get done. So the site support is here, and this is kind of going to kind of delve into, you know, basically hiring people to help me a little by little, and we'll see how this goes. But I'm pretty happy that the individual that basically kind of stepped up is available and going to be able to help me. And the next step is even going to be getting some people on the Raw Voice side that are going to be able to help over there as well. We're going to be talking a little bit about that this upcoming weekend. But my task list of things here to do and to get caught up is still extensive. And but a little way we're going to be able to whack away at this. And hopefully I can get my podcast / new media / website stuff whacked away quite a little bit. The new site design for Geek News Central is finished. And excuse me. It's locked away underneath a secret place, and we are working now on getting all of the static pages transferred over. I don't have a date on when we're going to launch it, but I'm real happy with the design. It's all done, and that's a perfect thing. I've got a lot of content for you tonight, a lot of tech content. For those of you new to the show, you probably wonder what this guy is talking about. This is supposed to be a geek show. Well, it is, but I spent a few minutes each show kind of talking about things going on here, and of course things going on with Raw Voice, my essentially the podcasting space. And so I hope that you'll, if you're checking out the show for the very first time, subscribe to the show. You can do that via the Geek News Central website. You can sign up for iTunes or either, you know, subscribe via iTunes, subscribe via Zune Marketplace. Actually, Zune Marketplace is in the news today. We'll talk about that later in the show. And, of course, you can always listen directly on the website at geeknewscentral.com. Sign up for our newsletter as well, so you get the show notes delivered directly to your inbox. And that will basically contain everything we talk about during tonight's show. And we'll get you up to speed on a little bit in advance of you listening to the show and what's being covered. Again, I fly out Wednesday evening late to get in Thursday afternoon to my destination. I do want to give a kind of an early, actually not early, but I want to extend a happy birthday to my sister out there. I don't know if she listens to the show or not, but if she does, happy birthday, sis. And I know how old you are. But hey, I do want to share something of a personal note with you guys. I think I talked a little bit on the last show, but if you are in a home right now and you have got an interest rate that is above 5.5%, maybe even a little bit less than that, refinance rates on homes, oh my goodness. Today, basically, I kind of finalized the interest rate that at least the lock-in rate. I got locked in today at 4.5%. It's going to cost me a point and a half to refinance, but it's going to lower. Of course, now I live here in Hawaii, so just please understand the housing prices are extreme here. It's going to lower my house payment by $583, and I could not be more excited. I'm going from a 5.9 to a 4.5, and the cool thing about it is I do my mortgage finance with Wells Fargo, is that they actually how they work it is you lock in the 4.5, but if the interest rate goes down during the 60 days that it takes to do the refinance, they will actually allow you to get into those lower points with kind of like a, I guess, how should I say it? It's like a half point. I don't know how it works, but you can get into it. Cost you a little more for the loan, not much, like half of what the actual point drop would be. So I don't know. I feel this was a pretty good time to lock in. Some people say, hey, it's going to go to 3.75, Todd. Don't do it yet. So I hope I don't kick myself here in a couple of months. But that's where we're at, and I'm pretty happy, to be honest with you. So if you're looking, if you haven't thought about this and you're in a position to be able to do it, I'm lucky, though, because I'm in a VA loan. So it really has not cost me that much to refinance at all. And I know that's not the case with people that are in non-VA type loans. You have to get the reappraisal and all that stuff. So I guess depending on your circumstances, whether you'd be able to do that or not. Okay, as I said, I got a lot of great tech to talk about tonight. And I forgot to load one of the most important things. Hey, we'll say that this past Saturday, we did the Tech Podcast Roundtable. And we went about an hour and 10 minutes. Lots of good information there, folks. Just a gold mine of data. We had three individuals in, and we had a gal that talked about some online courses you could take if you're considering doing, essentially, if you are at the point where you need to refresh your education. It's basically get some certificates for like learning MySQL or PHP. The link is over to their the university's website. It's one of these University of Technology type deals in conjunction with the University of Illinois. I'm probably goofing this all up, but they got a 40% discount right now. The code's available. It'll be available until April 1st, this discount. So get over to techpodcast.com. It's not our promo code, so we really don't make no money off it. Off you, the referral. So just go over there and give it a try, and you'll be able to maybe find some courses over there at really at a discount rate. Got to watch the roundtable though to get the details, because they kind of have a unique way of basically kind of letting you do this thing at your own pace. You don't get actual college credits for it, but you get a certificate basically is what you get, but still maybe good for your boss if he's looking for you doing some continuing education. Also, we had Jeffrey Powers from Geekazine. He talked about microphone recording, using microphones, talked about equalization settings, a bunch of different topics on podcast recording itself. So those would be good topics for you to review. And I'm pulling a doing a brain fart here on what the last topic was on. Actually, it was the first topic of the day. And let me load the website up over here and actually read off the show notes from the blog post. Oh, yeah. Well, United Plastics talked about soundproofing the home and about their home theater products. So you definitely want to check that out. They've got some pretty cool stuff coming to Home Depot online here pretty shortly as well. So it was O'Reilly School of Technology. That was the school that came on and gave us some talk about online certifications. And then, of course, Jeffrey Powers on microphone placement and EQ. That event was sponsored by GoToMeeting. And if you think about, you know, employing technology, $300 is the average cost of a domestic round-trip ticket. $49 is the GoToMeeting monthly rate. That's right. Hundreds of online meetings per month is less than one in-person meeting. With GoToMeeting, hold as many meetings as you want for one flat rate, free voice IP and phone conferencing included. Business travel is a profitability killer, so do more and travel less with GoToMeeting, the award-winning online service brought to you by Citrix. Try GoToMeeting free right now for 30 days for this special offer. You must visit www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. That's gotomeeting.com/techpodcast for a free trial. Of course, taking care of the rest of the business here before we get into the actual tech content. If you're looking for domain names, virtual dedicated servers, GoDaddy.com has what you need. And when you get to the checkout counter, use my promo codes, okay? It'll save you big money. Promo code Todd will save you 10% off your order. Geek5 will save you 20% on orders $20 or more. That's really a good one, and I don't think you're going to find too many codes that are that inexpensive. You basically save you that much money for that low of a basically a purchase of an item. Todd20 will save you 20% on 1 year shared hosting accounts. And so check those out over at GoDaddy.com. Thanks for GoDaddy for being a continued sponsor here at Geek News Central. All right, getting a little started a little late tonight. It's already 9. It's late in Honolulu. And just was basically got in, had to take care of some stuff with the kids. Wife is still out. And so it just kind of ran. It seems like I was running along and everything I did. Feed Demon crashed on me twice, so we'll see if it lasts during the show. I'm just got to change the workflow up and move over to just using the browser only. One reminder, the podcaster meetup this Thursday in Columbus, Ohio. Then we're going to be having a podcaster meetup in San Antonio, Dallas, and Albuquerque. If you're interested in coming out to any one of those events, email me immediately at geeknews@gmail.com. geeknews@gmail.com. Of course, call the voicemail hotline, 619-342-7365. I do have to apologize. I have no mobile app reviews tonight. Simply ran out of time. I had some stuff written down I was supposed to pull down and test, and I did not get a chance to do that. And I will not review or actually talk about applications that I have not actually tested myself. So apologize on that. We'll have some, hopefully, for the next show that will be coming to you as live, I guess, as it can be from Columbus. We'll have Sherry Cochran, my mom, from in the house when we do the next show in Columbus. So that should be a lot of fun. Hey, at the end of the show tonight, I got a couple of voicemails to go over. Of course, emails have been sent in by audience members as well. All right, let me go ahead and get into this stuff here. You know, if you guys have been following what's been going on at the International Space Station, you know that The spacewalks have went really well. They had a little bit of a hiccup on spacewalk number 2. They were unable to unfurl the solar panels. Now the International Space Station is up to its fully rated power that it will essentially have for its life of its mission up there. But for the third time in just recent days, the shuttle had to dodge some debris that there was basically space debris, and they basically reoriented the station a little bit and used Discovery to essentially kind of act as a brake almost and get them, I guess, deorbit a little bit, I guess for a better word, to move them out of the I guess this plane of this pizza plane that they consider the area that they have to take precautionary maneuvers for. So they had to do that. So, you know, this is kind of – this is wild. You know, we've heard about three of these incidents here in just as many days. Makes you really wonder. It's kind of scary because, you know, the last thing we want to see is the International Space Station getting hit by something, and then they have to abandon the you know, billions of dollars of taxpayer investments. Of course, not only U.S. taxpayer investments, but European Space Agency, the Japanese, you know, all the countries that have contributed can be, you know, essentially taken down for something at just a, you know, very small size. I guess, you know, something the size of a quarter hitting you at 50,000 miles per hour probably is not a healthy thing, and definitely will leave a hole in you. You know, that's what they're worried about. Now, they're prepared for, like, these meeny, itty-bitty little pieces of stuff, but anything much bigger than a quarter, the station really can't handle. But it was good that the solar panels were unfurled. They didn't have too much trouble with that, so they're pretty happy with the deployment. Now, you're going to get a laugh on this one. Did you know that NASA held a contest to name a new module at the International Space Station? Well, Stephen Colbert won an online contest to name the new Node 3 space module after him. I don't know how this has made the news today all over the place, but I guess this guy has quite the following. I think I maybe have listened to him once, so I'm sure I'm going to get blasted via emails, but. Quite honestly, he does like a comedy type news or something, doesn't he? It's pretty sad. I don't even know, but I guess he's got a pretty big cult following, and so he's won this naming contest. And NASA says that it's hard to believe. I'm just trying to still figure out if this is a joke, but it's on so many different sites. I can't believe that it would be, but it's going to be the Stephen Colbert Node on the International Space Station. Something about that is just not right. It really isn't. All right, Asa Dulser over at Mozilla Foundation has got a blog posting about the Pawn to Own event that happened last week, where not only did Safari, Internet Explorer, and Firefox get pawned by hackers being able to find a bug and exploit the bug. Chrome was the only one. There was one browser that didn't get hacked, and so people are like, wow, it must be that browser was really super secure. But he comes on here and gives this basically, I don't know if it's kind of almost like an excuse. And this is kind of the first time I've seen a post from him that I'm kind of like, all right, Asa, come on now. You need to take your lumps here. If Firefox had a hole, it had a hole. But he says here, first, the people winning at Pawn to Own are professional, extremely talented, and dedicated professionals. They have the time and smarts to find exploit holes in probably any internet-connected software. They're not amateurs. They get paid for the difficult work. Now, this is – okay, that kind of makes sense. He says, because the work is often time-consuming, difficult, and takes a very specific set of expertise, they don't go after every hole and every exploit in every piece of internet-connected software. They work in a marketplace that prioritizes the through personal and company fame and through cold, hard cash. I'm like, huh? Because this is where he lost me, was in through cold, hard cash. Now, I understand companies trying to have a reputation for being able to find security holes. You know, that's very valuable, and that's, you know, very good press for a company. He says, in practice, he says, that means that some exploits are worth a lot more than others. A really good IE exploit can fetch tens of thousands of dollars. A Firefox exploit is also worth a lot, but probably somewhat less than an IE exploit. A Safari exploit is certainly worth less, and it's hard to know if a Chrome or Opera exploit is worth any cash at all. Okay, can someone in this space tell me, do developers pay for them to reveal these exploits? Or is he referring to this, that they sell the exploits to the highest bidder? Because he says in the second paragraph here, that these are professionals, very smart people. They work for companies. You know, they have they work in a marketplace that prioritizes through personal and company fame. So that tells me that these are companies that, you know, again, will go after any piece of software to see if there's an exploit, probably for cash. But does IE, does Mozilla Foundation, does Safari, does the folks at Chrome and Opera actually pay these companies to find, like a bounty to find these exploits? I don't get this. I really don't. So this is where I'm critical of this article, that he doesn't go into this detail on how this cash thing works. Now, if they're, this pawn to own is a contest where not only will the person that breaks the hack on, or basically exploits a bug in a browser, they get a $10,000 cash reward plus the device that a laptop or whatever it was being hosted on that was being attacked. So, okay, so if they were given $10,000 cash to each specific browser, I understand the, you know, the need to go out there and try to exploit these security, these very complicated security holes. But at the same point, I don't understand the other part of his post here. I understand this contest, but I don't understand if these, if they're actually paying for cash for regular exploits that they find in the wild on a day-to-day basis. Anybody have any experience in this? So, and I'm looking through the comments here, and they have some interesting comments as well that kind of ask some of the same questions. So have a link up this in the show notes. You guys can all check it out. All right, Mark Cuban has just another bizarre post, and you can tell that he is an owner of a television network. And it starts out saying, calling all cable and satellite and teleco TV subscribers. I'm outraged, and you, so should you. And so you should be. Excuse me. He says, we work hard. We want the biggest selection of TV networks on and on-demand content that we can get, preferably in beautiful high def, to enjoy our new or plan HD TV. We pay bills. We watch TV. He goes on to say, oh, we watch it alone. We watch with a drink in our hand and a remote control and, you know, glorifying using the TV and using their DVRs as they see fit. But he goes on later in this. He says, like any good system, there are those that want to have their cake and eat it too. The content we pay for, they want it free. We pay for it. They want it for free. How is that fair? Where is the justice? He says, we pay for the content. We should be able to get it where we want it and when we want it. Those who want it free, they should pay too. Call your cable, telco, satellite, video provider and tell them you don't think it's fair that the content we pay for is available for free. Content payers unite. Give me a break. Give me a break. This is, you know, he can post some good stuff at times. But this is the ultimate self-serving puff piece that I have seen in a very long time. Mark, give me a break. Really, come on. Let's be honest here. If Hulu so decides to put their videos up there, that's their business. If you don't want your HD videos up online, you know, then go send out a DMCA takedown notice and have them removed. You know? Come on. If those other companies want to put that stuff up available for free, that's their choice. What are you getting at here? I don't get it. Is he going after Boxy? Who's he going after in this, in these comments? It must be something has happened. Must be someone is pilfering his HDTV channels and putting them online for everyone to see for free. I don't know. If someone else understands where he's coming from besides self-serving puff piece posts like this, then, you know, email geeknews@gmail.com or call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. You know, just for a while, you're starting to kind of respect some of the stuff the guy posts, and then he posts this. You know, I still respect the guy. He's making a lot of money. He's smart. But this here, I'm like, okay, why did you even waste your breath? Because for the majority of us, we want content where we can get it, when we can get it, on demand, online, you know, I don't get it. Okay. For you Mac users, do you know that I was reading this article about the Finder tools? And I'll be honest with you. Finder is probably one of those things that for a switcher or a person that's using a Mac, it's probably one of those things that we really don't understand that well. And I read through this article about the five most underused Finder tools. And I had to say, wow, it does that? Wow, that happens? Wow, you can do this? If you are, if you don't use Finder very much, you maybe ought to read up about Finder a little more on the Mac, because I was reading some of this. I was like, I didn't know that could do that. That's pretty cool. So if you are an experienced Finder user, this is a pretty good article on the five most underused Finder tools. I have it linked up in the show notes. Okay, here's a good one for you. Did you know that the Sci-Fi, S-C-I-F-I channel is changing their name? They're changing it to S-Y-F-Y, Sci-Fi, instead of S-C-I-F-I. I think that that is just ridiculous. So the Sci-Fi channel founder, who originated this back in 1991 and sold the concept to the USA Network, really has bashed the group for changing the name. Actually, NBC Universal's plan to change the name to this new SYFY. You know, my wife was asking me the other night, she says, honey, what channel is the Sci-Fi channel on? And here in Honolulu, it's on 1033. And I told her that, and she found it. And I said, or you could just search for SCIFI. But I guess now she's going to have to type in SYFY. I don't get this. Do you guys get this? I think this is a dumb move. It really is. Are they trying to redefine the word sci-fi? I just, maybe it's a trademark issue. I don't know. But it doesn't make sense to me. It really, really doesn't. Hey, over on telegraph.co.uk, there's a pretty cool video here. It's a video of some new tools that the Army's employing overseas, and it's called the Dragon Runner. It's called Dragon Runner, and they did a demo of this thing. And what they are, they're little hovercraft with cameras in them. And instead of having a person come up to what they think may be an IUD, or IED, improvised explosive device, they can launch one of these things, and it'll hover over to the area. They can take a picture of it with the camera. And then if they want to get above it, they can get above it and go around it and look at it. Or they can soar. This thing can go as high as I read here how high it was, like 100 feet in the air. And it can fly at 46 miles per hour. It uses a fan duct engine, can land quick, can be put in a backpack. Doesn't say how long it can fly, but they say it has already saved a number of American lives in Afghanistan, or 25 in service, and some other people could be putting them into service soon. So these are pretty cool. The operator uses a special glove to fly it, and actually operate some scissors that's built on it, all kinds of cool stuff. But that just goes to show you that for a relatively inexpensive price, I guess, well, they're not that cheap. If you add the military tax on everything, how much did they say? They bought six of them for the cost of a luxury car. So I guess they would, what do you consider a luxury car cost? $60,000, so maybe 10 grand a piece. But really cheap if you consider that if it saves a single life, most military members are insured up to $400,000. Obviously nothing can replace a life, but if you look at it from a pure dollar sense, very, very inexpensive, good tool for the Army and Marines and whoever else are using these out there. So pretty cool, kind of a cool video. When you check it out, I think you'll agree with me that just sometimes the simplest technology works the best. All right, in a sad decision here. The new administration, specifically President Obama's administration, has sided with the RIAA and they are supporting a $150,000 fine per music track copyright violation. Now, this should not come as a surprise because I guess the number two, number three, number four person in the specific group that wrote this new position by the administration are former RIAA lawyers. Donald Riley Jr. is Associate Deputy Attorney General who brought down Grokster, and Jamie Thomas also fought to prevent a retrial in the Jamie Thomas case. And then the number two at the DOJ Department of Justice is Tom Perilli. He's Verrilli's, kind of funny, these guys have almost the same last name, Verrilli's former boss, and who argued in 2002 that internet service providers should release customer information to the RIAA even without a court subpoena. So they have basically agreed that the infringement damages it could be as high as $150,000 per music track. So if people thought that there was going to be any relief from that standpoint from the administration, it did not happen. Weighing in on this file-sharing lawsuit that's in process right now. So don't know. I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts on this. And is this what you expected? Are you not surprised? Is it more of the same? But, you know, no better than the previous administration when it comes to this, because they were definitely on board on supporting these big, extraordinary fines that the RIAA and other groups are being able to really suck the life out of people that may or have not known about it. I got a really cool article coming up I'm really excited about, but I'll talk about this tech article first. Blockbuster is suffering big time. They've lost $359 million in the last quarter. The CEO of the company says that it is a result of bad movies. You know, I have to kind of agree with him because we were looking – I loaded pay-per-view here, and we went through the new movie releases, and – it was just a bunch of horror movies. Now, if you're into horror movies, there's a lot of new horror movies out right now for you. I went through, then I loaded my Voodoo box, and we went through those movies. There wasn't much difference there. Checked out the Blockbuster. I looked in my Blockbuster queue to see what was new. Not a lot of new movies there as well. And is it just me, or are there not just a lot of movies being released right now? But I don't think that can fully attest to the $359.7 million they lost there. So that's huge. Now, Netflix continues to do very well, and their stock is still trading above the $41 mark, so they're not being hurt. But I think Blockbuster stores is soon to be a point they're going to be at a point of no return here. And I bet you within the next year, Blockbuster will be an online-only company, just like Netflix is. So we'll see what happens. All right, in the world of weight loss, there is a new fat-blasting device. It's a non-invasive procedure designed to freeze out cellulite. So, you know, if you're looking for a new way to get rid of the fat, what this does, and they're saying within a couple of months, the FDA is in the process of approving it for its use here. It was a procedure developed by Harvard Medical School and the Massachusetts General Hospital. And it's what they do is they place like it's about the size of a saucer cup, a coffee saucer. It's a suction cup-like apparatus on the skin. And what it does is it gradually extracts body heat until the subcutaneous level of fat are frozen. So it doesn't freeze the skin, but it sucks enough heat out in a way that it's by dropping the temperature slowly, because you know the skin still has blood flow in it, so it gets into the fat. It actually freezes the blood fat cells, essentially kind of like killing them off. And then over the next 90 days after the treatment, you see a 25 to 35% loss in body fat for the areas that were treated. And it's non-invasive. Takes about an hour to do for a specific area. So I can see now that this, what's going to happen? These things are going to be sold in homes. People are going to be there's going to be devices that people are going to be using in their homes to get rid of fat, and people are going to be getting skin burned. There'll be all kinds of crazy stuff going on here, but you can just about bet that you give them a year and there's going to be stuff being sold online that you'll be able to do your own weight reduction stuff in your home. But of the 200 subjects were tested, and they averaged about a 25% reduction in fat. So from a single session, they don't go into, you know, how many more sessions do you have to have? And I think if I remember my biology correct, the human body is only, when you are born, you have X number of fat cells. And really, they don't multiply. They just get bigger. So this is pretty interesting. Pretty good stuff here. And but you can watch. This is going to be the next fad. It really, really will. Okay, new type of exploit going on out here. They're finding denial of service attacks being initiated across a botnet being launched from DSL modems and routers. It's not this hack is not targeting PCs or servers. It's actually going to the device that's sitting on your shelf that your computer is hooked to. And they're doing multiple strategies for exploitation, including brute force, username, and password combinations. And it harvests usernames and passwords through deep packet inspection. This is a big one here. So any Linux MIPSO, MIPSEL routing device that has the router administration interface or SSHD or Telnet TD in a DMZ, which has weak usernames and passwords, are really vulnerable here. And there's over 100,000 of them that have been infected. Now, they're not talking yet here about exactly which devices. But please, if you have a router, make sure that it can't be logged on from outside of your net, a local net. And also make sure that you're using a strong username and a strong password for these things, okay? Because this seems to be the biggest thing now is they're not even going after your PC. They're just using these devices that are attached to your network. All right. Oh, folks at Skype have really made some big announcements here. And this may not mean a lot to a lot of people, but the ramifications here are huge. Skype launched a new service to ease the transition of small business into internet telephony. It's a bid to capture some needed revenue by tapping into a market expects will find cheap phone service in global recession. It's Skype for SIP or SIP. It's a lot of PBX systems that are out there are using a session internet initiation protocol or SIP as a common interface. This goes for a lot of devices. I believe that open source, what is that called? I can't think of it. You can build one of these yourself. It's your own. You can build your own PBX and put your own voice IP phone over it. What is the name of the thing? Oh, gosh. That will be able to be integrated. What was it? Well, that tells you. Angelo's listening to the show right now, and he's laughing because he's yelling the name of the actual device. Well, anyway, if you have a SIP-enabled PBX, you're going to be able to establish a codec that will integrate with Skype. So this is pretty big. This is really big for business users. Now, I get two or three articles down here. I'm going to remember the name of that software. It's right on the tip of my right on the tip of my tongue here. But pretty cool news out of Skype. All right. More security news. And it's from the Digital Underground at threatpost.com. Researchers unveiled a persistent BIOS attack method that if someone gets access to your machine and it hacks it with these new codes, it's actually an OS patch that actually patches some code right on your motherboard, and it won't survive. You can reflash the BIOS. You can wipe out the hard drive. Doesn't matter what you do. The BIOS will continue to be rewritten, and the person can own your machine. It was a very easy hack that they demonstrated. So, you know, make sure when you're walking away from your computer, especially if it's a work computer or something that's being, you're at a conference or something, log out, okay? And make sure that people can't, or lock the, you know, make it required so you have to put a screensaver password or whatever so people don't get access to your machine. I'm sure there'll be some exploits coming where people will be able to do this remotely, but right now they have to have physical access to the computer. All right, big news out of Microsoft, and this was from Ballmer. He says, Zune's future might be a software on non-Zune devices. This is big. This is very, very big. Imagine Apple licensing the iPod software to other manufacturers. They're never going to do it, right? Well, Microsoft is looking to move Zune into non-Zune devices. That's big. That's big, big, big. And could cause a substantial growth of devices out there running this software integrated with the Zune marketplace. You know, again, big, big numbers of people are listening to this podcast on Zune devices. You know, we see the numbers of the numbers of people that are actually downloading through Zune marketplace, the media. And for me, this is big news. This is great. I hope that they continue to push this. You're going to continue to have access to Zune devices from Microsoft, but you may see the Zune software on additional devices. So it's big. Remember the last couple shows ago, we talked about the Dell Atomo, the ADAMO. Well, you know, I'm always looking for more sleek designs on laptops, looking for more power. And, you know, this Dell Atomo is a high-end machine, really, really nice. But as soon as I read today that the battery is not going to be able to be replaced by the user, it automatically goes in a – it's a no start for me for this particular notebook. If you can't – you know, here's the thing. How many of you travel with an extra notebook battery? I do. Because I'm seeing like I'm always killing my battery no matter where I'm at. I always have an extra battery. And I just can't imagine not having a notebook and not being able to stick another battery in it when I need to. Maybe it's got super long life, but I tell you, I can kill batteries on laptops. I really can't. So we'll have to see what happens here with this. But this is – they're going down the path of Apple here on – I don't get it. I really, really don't get it. All right, the folks over at Netflix, they have laid out an official response to bandwidth capping allegations. Here's what they've had to say. The outfit's chief product officer, Neil Hunt, has come forward to clear the air. He makes clear that Netflix's aspiration is to deliver to everyone the best bit rate that their broadband connection can support, also noting that congestion – could affect some users, but not others at some times, but not always. So that's kind of a mouthful. Could affect some users, but not others at some times, but not always. He also notes that the different titles and end codes for different playback devices types may come from different CDNs or different servers at a particular CDN. So they may have different paths and different bottlenecks. We'd encourage you to hit the read link for the full explanation. Oh, this is a... He goes on to the folks at Engadget going to say that they're already seeing enraged Roku users bark back by dodging of the so-called out-of-sync audio issue that's evidently still present. Hey, are those of you Roku users, you guys seeing that on Netflix? You guys seeing out-of-sync audio? You know, I see that on my videos sometimes, and I have to kind of slide the audio a little bit. The TriCaster does it just once in a while when, you know, either it's running. I don't know why it does it, but it does it from time to time. And it drives me crazy because you can watch something and the lips are off a little bit. It looks like you're watching a Chinese movie that's been subtitled in English. yeah, I haven't heard about this by the Roku users. I haven't heard this about Roku. How many of you have been in a Fry's recently? You know, I got to admit, I love Fry's. Every time I get near one, I go to one, and usually my credit card gets hurt in a big way. And not so much anymore because I used to build all my machines, and I've quit building machines. But they've got a demo, and I don't know what store they were in, but it's a Monster Cable demo where they have two monitors. In one, with one monitor, they're showing the video feed with a Monster Cable plugged into an HDMI port. In the other monitor, you would think that they would be using just some stock HDMI cable. Oh, no. What they're doing is they're sending the same video. Get this. Guess what they're sending it to? They're sending it, sending the video to the monitor via a composite cable. They show two pictures here. They show the HDMI cable hooked up, and then they show a composite cable hooked up to the other monitor. This is an outright scam. This is an absolute scam. Anyone with half a brain knows that the delta between an HDMI cable and the video you see from that and the delta and the difference between a composite cable is really different. Yeah, you know what I mean by composite? You guys know the little yellow connector on your television sets? The connector that, you know, a composite video out of a VHS goes to a TV set, that little yellow cable, that's what they're feeding. That's what they're using as a comparison, HDMI to composite video. This is big time false advertising. It's criminal. This is just beyond criminal what they're doing here. And I hope someone gets the clue and removes these removes this display. It's very much unfair. It really is. I don't get it. You know how the moving on here. You know how there's been lots of videos of people, you know, getting caught tased. You know, cops are tasing people. You know that one big instance where I guess it was Vice President Gore was speaking, and he was some guy, some kid in the class in the presentation stood up and started yelling or something, and the police came in, and the kid was screaming, "Don't tase me, bro! Don't tase me, bro!" Well, there's a new device being sold to police departments. It's called Axon. It's made by the folks from Taser. And what it is it's a wearable over-the-ear webcam. It essentially, you know, you put it on just like you would a pair of behind-the-ear, wrap-around-behind-your-head type of headphones. But instead, there's a little camera that pokes out at eye level that's going to allow police departments to record what officers are seeing. I highly doubt, here in all honesty, that I'm sure some police officers are not going to be happy about having to wear these. And they're already getting recorded out of their cameras. Now they're going to carry a camera on their body, and they're probably going to get their voice recorded at the same time. Well, I'm sure that's going to go over well in court cases. But we will see how this goes. So we'll see how many. If you see a police officer walking up to you and he's got one of these cameras going, better be careful what you say. All right, Windows Home Server Power Pack 2 is on the streets. It brings big improvements to the media sharing and remote access. So this is out and available. There's improved and simplified remote access handling, as well as media sharing through Windows Media Center extenders. All kinds of cool stuff here coming to Windows Home. There's also MP4 support and a bunch of bug fixes you're going to see. So excited to see this update coming to Windows Home Server. It's Power Pack 2 available today. All right, how many of you have been watching Dancing with the Stars or whatever they call it? Have you guys been watching Woz? Of course, he's been having a little bit of trouble out there. And but he is going to be dancing this week, so we recommend all of you that want to vote for a geek to vote for Woz, and if nothing else, to see if the geeks can win this thing. And Dancing with the Stars is on ABC, and don't ask me what time it comes on because I don't know. But I guess he's nursing a pulled hamstring, but he'll be on next. All right, I'm being a techie at heart, having worked many years in the aviation industry. Done a lot of soldering in my life and have been exposed to all kinds of soldering stations, soldered upside down, inside racks, no ventilation, ventilation, you know, just all kinds of crazy places that I've had to solder a connector here or there, or rebuild a multi-pin connector, just, you know, you name it, I've done it. But, you know, generally we had pretty good tools. And I remember one of the solder stations we had was really was a micro min station where there was a very high-end soldering iron with adjustable heat and temperature. And I don't know how much this thing costs. They're expensive, but they've got all kinds of ducting around it to, you know, suck all the gases out and smoke and probably lead exposure. Who knows what else? But the folks over at Make Magazine, if you're a geek, and you are working, you do a lot of different soldering jobs, you'll definitely want to check out some of the cool things that some folks have developed in making their own soldering iron stations. This is a great DIY for the garage. And I saw this thing, I'm like, wow, some people are pretty smart, come up with some pretty cool and innovative ideas. I like the big suction hose over a soldering station that someone, this had to be a sailor that did this because this was where the concept probably came from. But I think when you guys see this article that you'll get a pretty good kick out of it. And you know, let me tell you, make just a little suggestion too. If you go to Radio Shack and buy a $12.95 soldering iron and you're expecting to solder something really nice in a nice way, just understand you bought a $12.95 soldering iron. And, you know, the better tips and the better heating conductivity and stuff definitely get better with the more money you spend. And Weller, they make some great stuff. I recommend all their products, especially some of their soldering irons that actually have adjustable heat. Those are really good. Of course, they're getting up into price range as well. But if you want to do a good job on something, don't be doing that with a $12.95 Radio Shack soldering iron, because you will get the result that you would expect from that type of device. Okay, we are I'm done with the regular content for tonight. Kind of short, yeah, but not a lot of stuff in the news tonight that I could pull from. Of course, Speed Demon wasn't cooperating as well as it should be, and kind of a weird start to the show tonight, but we've got some voicemails to get into. And I have a number of emails as well. Have not previewed the voicemails, but I do want to talk just a little bit about the let me cancel this. This thing's trying to do an update again. Let me talk a little bit about the voicemail system. You know, we've been getting these automated messages, right, from these companies trying to sell me things. And people were kind of misunderstood what I was saying and not being able to pre-program in a, you know, making someone punch a one. This voicemail system is basically pretty simple. There's not a lot of options that I have to it. But I do like the suggestion of someone say, hey, go ahead and pre-record. When you do the recording for your voicemail, at the very end, you know, mash the number one button on your phone, and that will get translated into the recording that is being used by, you know, that will get to push back out the other way. Because when all that software that's calling, all the automated software is looking for is that tone. And the recorded tone will work fine and basically being able to cancel me off those calling list. So don't be surprised if you call the voicemail hotline in the future and you say, hey, leave your message for the show now and hear a doot. Please understand it's to get rid of all the ads we'd be getting on the voicemail hotline. But anyway, let me go ahead and play the two voicemails we have. Again, I haven't previewed these, so we'll see what we get here.
G'day, Todd. It's Eric from Australia.
Hey, Eric.
You may know me from IrkPod and now, of course, Channel Irk, channelirk.com.
Of course, and you're coming
in. Anywho, mate, on your last show that I've just finished listening to, you asked an Australian to call in relation to internet filtering here in this country.
Yes.
Now, long story cut short, because it's been going on for months, this relates to the Australian federal government's plan to filter the internet. And the main pusher of this is the Federal Communications Minister, Mr. Stephen Conroy. Now, on ErkPod for months, I've been calling this the Great Wall of Rudd, after the Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd. And basically, his plan is to mandatory filter of the internet. And that's basically what he wants to do. The tech and IT community here in Australia are up in arms about it, but it hasn't had a lot of media coverage, unfortunately, in the mainstream. But as I said, the tech and IT industry have been protesting about it, trying to tell the government that it's basically unworkable to try and cut out all the quote-unquote nasties that are roaming on the internet. And keep in mind, Todd, they want to make this mandatory, like a mandatory firewall for all Australians on the interweb. One of the tactics that the government has been using is to say that these filters will help to protect our children and will protect our children from quote-unquote child porn. Now, who is going to argue about that when the government says this will help to protect your children against seeing porn and against child porn? Who's going to argue about that? And, of course, if you try to argue it, people will say, oh, well, that must mean you're in favour of porn. You're in favour of child porn. And that's clearly not the case. And while people have different opinions on adult porn, I'm sure that everyone will have an opinion against child porn. And it's very important to know the difference between child and adult porn. So we're just about to start a trial of the quote-unquote mandatory firewall system, or the Great Wall of Rudd, as I've been calling it for months. And there are five separate ISPs that are just about to start this trial. We don't know when it's starting yet. And then, of course, the government will have a look at the results of the trial, and then, me being cynical here, they'll probably just do it anyway. Anyway, mate, great show. Looking forward to coming over to the US in under 2 weeks, and I'll give you a wave as I pass over Hawaii. Bye, mate.
Hey, thanks for the call, and thanks for the update. And I think you weren't driving the train when you were doing that call, were you? The last thing I want to have is you be in the news and me be in the news for you calling the voicemail hotline when you're driving the transit train that you drive. Hey, I know you're coming out to the United States, and I know that your and I's paths, I don't think, are going to be crossing. But maybe there's going to be some chances when I'm in Texas and some of these other places that we can hook up. Please send me your full itinerary so that or I'll be watching your website as well. But thanks for the call. And yeah, it's a sticky situation, isn't it, with the whole but the thing is, that list contained a lot more sites than just porn sites. That was the thing that got people's feathers ruffled. It really did. So thanks for the call, and keep us updated, please. All right, here's the next voicemail.
Hey, Todd, this is Bennett again from Philly.
Hey.
I was calling to give you my opinion on my favorite iPhone app.
Hey, great.
I have one that's called Wonder Radio.
Wonder Radio.
There's a lot of national radio apps, but you got to manually put in all of, IP addresses and everything else like that. It's pretty annoying. But this one is just about it. It's national. It definitely got just about all the national streaming stations. You got to do is type in sign or, their number and what city or state. You don't have to put in too much, but it's cool because it got some international station like BBC London and stuff like that, a Japanese station. It's an international radio station. I mean, radio app, and it's just awesome. Like, I don't know what I would do. I can't think of a secondary app that I can name, but I know I love this app more than any app I got on my iPod Touch right now. But yeah, it's just great. And on top of that, you could look at train station traffic, airport traffic, police traffic, and fire station traffic. Why that's on there, I don't know. But it's called Scanners USA or something. Check it out sometime. Love the show.
Hey, I will, and thanks for the suggestion on the app. You know something, though? Why are you listening to traditional radio? Tune all those guys out. There's plenty of podcasts to be found out there. Got to give up that terrestrial traditional stuff, okay? Just kidding. Hey, I want to thank Bree for sending me a pretty cool image. And what I'm going to put this link up in the show notes. You guys have to print this, okay? When you load the webpage, you got to print it. It's a 3D image. It's NASA in 3D. And all I can say is go ahead and print it and check it out. It's pretty cool. It really is. So I have the link up to that in show notes. Bree, thanks for that. Longtime listener, of course. Bree's out of D.C. Got an email from Lamar. He said, "Hey, Todd, I agree that every OS can be interchangeable. It does depend on the user. As a recent switcher, I appreciate the banter from both sides. My background is in mainframes, but I have dabbled in Win, Linux, AIX, and Mac. Everyone's experience is different. The PC fanboys and the fangirls beat up on Apple. The Apple fanboys and fangirls beat up on Microsoft. Both get a bit crazy at times, but I hope those who really enjoy computing don't truly get too caught up in the minute details. I will say that Microsoft should stop the 31 flavors OS releases. They should have two versions, basic and pro. I agree. They should stop the they should drop the price too. No OS, in my opinion, should be more than $150. Anyway, I love computing, and I prefer the Apple OS experience. Keep up the good work, because I appreciate your show. Take care, Lamar, via his 3G iPhone." He also sent me a couple of apps. He said, "Todd, I have used Twitterific, but I prefer Twitter Fon, T-W-I-T-T-E-R-F-O-N. This one has a better interface, I believe. Thanks for the suggestion on that." And he also says, "Another app that I think is great is called iTalk. It's a great free app that records to your iPhone. There is another app that can be downloaded to your Mac. Not sure if there's a PC version. This came in handy during a recent conference I attended. I had no notepad available, but I was able to record the speaker and later transcribe by what was said. Pretty cool. I think there's a pro version that costs, but it's not too expensive. Check it out. If no one has mentioned it, take care." So again, the app is called iTalk. So I'm surprised that they haven't gotten in trouble with the little copyright issue there with the version of that. Got an email from Greg. Say, "Hey, Todd, I didn't hear you mention anything about Austin. However, if you're driving through San Antonio on your way to Dallas-Fort Worth, you have to go through Austin." I'm going to be in Austin, Greg. Don't worry. "How about organizing or letting Austin Ohana organize a quick lunch, dinner, whatever in Austin? Austin, for its size, wields far more influence in tech community than cities much larger. You're the 16th largest city in the U.S. with South by Southwest wrapping up here. There are plenty of U.S. folks who call the live music capital of the world. So why don't you give a shout out on your next show and see how many listeners we can get to come out of the woodwork and visit you, even if it's just for an hour. So what do you say?" Okay, Greg, here's the deal. We're going to be doing the Austin meetup. Let me look at my calendar here so I make sure I give you the right day. On Saturday, April 4th, lunchtime. Okay, around lunchtime on Saturday, April 4th. So if you want to head the charge and where we're going to eat and what we're going to eat, please do so. I'm up for anything. Been to Austin before. I really love Austin. I'll be honest with you. If I was to live in any city outside the United States, yeah, Texas is not its own state. If I lived anywhere outside of Hawaii, I think Austin would be very, very high on that list. I really do. I love Austin, too. I got an email from Jim. He said, "Hey, here's a high-res photo of the bat in red circle on the external fuel tank of the shuttle. It is from NASA. I kind of feel bad for that bat now." You know, that bat definitely went on some sort of a ride. I got an email, a couple of these from folks, and Trucker Tom sent me an email. Says, "What does $1 trillion look like?" Hey, do we have a link to that? Tom, do you actually have a hardcore URL for that? Because in my page, it loads. If you guys just do a Google search, what does $1 trillion look like? And I think you'll be pretty impressed with that. Hey, I got an email from Nier. He says, "Hey, Todd, this may not be suitable for a podcast. Up to you decide. I'm trying to take your suggestion to use WordPress for my web design. However, it appears to not be that simple to install. Or is it that I may be missing something? It does not appear to install, unlike other programs." Nir, I'm not sure what's happening. I actually find WordPress to be one of the easier ones to install. The way I do it is I download it from WordPress. I unzip it into its own directory. I load my FTP application, and I upload it into the main directory that I want the a site to be hosted in. So in other words, if you're going to run in a subdomain or in the main domain name, you upload it to that area. Be cautioned if you're already running something there. This is you'll want to put it in a test environment before you put it out to for real. And then I create a MySQL account. I usually do that manually. Not a MySQL account. I create a MySQL database, assign a username and password. And then I believe there's a little config file you have to edit to put that data in. And then you just basically load the browser page. I think you can even do install.php. And it pretty much does its own thing. It's pretty simple to use. I probably missed some steps there, but just do a Google search for install WordPress. You'll probably find 1,000 pages on it. Maybe it'll get you through. If you're still having problems, definitely email us back to the show. Maybe we can get somebody to help you out. Maybe I even can help you out. Irk sent me some more stuff in addition to the voicemail. He says, hey, further to my voicemail of Sunday night, here's a media release from one of our ISPs. IINet is withdrawing from the government trial of the internet filtering. This is hot off the press, Monday, Australian time. Note the text of the media release is below, but I have also attached the PDF. So IINet, one of the ISPs in Australia, has said, nope, we're not playing that game. And they've walked away from it. So that's nice that the internet service provider has walked. Todd, just a quick note while I'm thinking about it. You mentioned Cisco owns MySQL. Yes, I was incorrect, and I corrected myself at the end of the show. You're right. It is Sun Microsystems. So apologize for my little boo-boo at the beginning of the last show. I did correct myself at the end, but thanks for the correction anyway. Got an email from Richard. He says, hey, Todd, I'm Richard, and I'm from the beautiful town of, oh my goodness, Lichtenvoort in the Netherlands. In your last show, you let us hear another annoying advertorial tape phone call. Press 1 for more info. Press 2 to delete yourself from list. After you let us hear it, you stated that pressing 2 for deletion could not have any effect because it would not work. In other words, the reason it wouldn't work is because there's no one there to manually intervene. Maybe I didn't understand what you meant. Hey, I'm Dutch, and although I can speak English reasonably well, it's not my native language. But it sure could have been a... could have an effect and delete you from the list. As much as I would hate it to be at the receiving end of those phone calls, it can be used for good measure. The company I work for provides PBX software which can do this. I know of an example in the Netherlands in a hospital. This PBX software automatically calls patients 3 days before the appointment with a specialist. After the patient picks up the phone, the tape begins to play and reminds the patient of his appointment. The tape also states the patient can press 2 if the patient wants to make another appointment because they are unable to attend for any reason. After they press 2, the patients connect to a real-life person with which they can make another appointment. So if configured correctly, you could be removed from the list if you press 2 or any other key they ask you to press. Keep up the good work. Basically what it is, Richard, is that it's just a machine somewhere out in cyberspace. I don't even – when I get indication that there's a new voicemail, it comes in via email. So I'd have to record that beep into the recording. And this is what Eric basically suggested me to do, is record the beep into the actual recording. And Pete, yes, don't worry. I've got you down on the list to meet up in Albuquerque. Starting to get a real good list for Albuquerque. And so looking forward to the meetups, Austin, Albuquerque, Dallas, and, of course, in Columbus this coming Thursday. All right, folks, we are at the end of the content here, doing okay for time. And as always, send your comments to geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline 619-342-7365. Appreciate y'all hanging out with me here tonight. It's been fun. And, of course, I'll have another show for you at the end of the week. Don't know how quite the format's going to be next at the end of the week, because I will definitely be suffering from jet lag when I get into Columbus. So we'll see how it all works. Of course, I am going to try to sleep on the flight. We'll see how well that works out. But anyway, taking the show on the road, going to be on the road quite a bit. I'm going to be in Columbus. Here's how this is going to work. Call me crazy, but I'm going to Columbus, flying back on Monday, washing my clothes, and then returning around Tuesday and flying out for Dallas. And part of the reason I got to come all the way back is someone else is paying for the second ticket. So it just didn't work out that I had them scheduled at the same time. So yeah, I'll be collecting some frequent flyer miles. But we'll be back with you next Friday, or this Friday, for the next show. Appreciate y'all hanging out with me. Y'all have a great week. And again, take care and aloha.